keep asking everybody if the second bell's rung, and they say it has, but I haven't heard it yet. So if we're ready to start, we'll start. Go ahead and be turning your Bibles to the book of Proverbs. We'll be picking up again in our study in Proverbs. Today's topic is along the line of wisdom chooses the better things. And the book of Proverbs makes contrasts and comparisons as to what things are better and what wisdom will drive us to. But I think before we begin our primary focus on that, I think it's important to make some key distinctions. As we've gone through our study again, the study of Proverbs is topical. It's important to look at the different aspects as they build on top of each other. And one of the aspects associated with wisdom is there's some distinctions between what wisdom is and what knowledge and instruction might be. So when we look at the idea of instruction, what is instruction? Hopefully it's what I'm doing today, sitting here talking to you. I'm talking and describing a topic so that we can learn from it. Now, if you learn from that, what do you then gain? I'm going to tell you, so I see wisdom mentioned, and you might gain wisdom, but you gain understanding, and you gain knowledge. So there's some key distinctions here. We have instruction, which is the imparting of the knowledge. We have knowledge, and then we have wisdom that comes after that. Now, there's distinctions between each of those. I can have a lot of knowledge, and I can be a really smart person, but how I choose to apply that is a distinction made with respect to wisdom. I can apply it wisely. I can apply it foolishly. So they're not all synonymous in what they provide. The smartest person in the world might be the most foolish in how they apply that knowledge. The most brilliant astrophysicist may be completely blind to the idea of God because of the knowledge and his background and training. So as we look at those things, it's important to understand the distinctions because the Bible makes those distinctions. And some of the passages that we'll be looking at today, it'll talk about that building effect and where we go to. Now, I think it's important as well, as we look at the idea of wisdom, what shapes our picture of how to frame and how to apply wisdom? When we're an infant, do we immediately have wisdom? Okay, what do we go through in life that makes us more wise? Upbringing of your parents, the instruction that they give you and how they tell you to apply that knowledge, that would be one thing. What about the child that reaches to a hot stove? He learns from experience immediately. And it's not wise to touch that stove because it's going to burn. The first time you drive too fast and get a ticket for it, you learn a valuable experience. And it's those experiences that give us, well, I thought I was smart, but did I apply my knowledge and my wisdom wisely? So again, it makes our life experiences. So as we communicate with fellow brethren and how we work with fellow brethren, we have instruction that we've been given with respect to the word. We have knowledge of the word. But if we're not interacting with them on a regular basis, do we know necessarily how to apply our interactions and communication wisely with them? No, because we don't necessarily know where they stand. We have not necessarily practiced ourselves and honed our skills on how to communicate with them in a way that will elicit the types of responses that we need. So, you know, it's a combination when we look at these passages here that I want to add in. The one other aspect of it is our life experiences fit with it as well. So we have instruction, we have knowledge, we have our life experiences shaping that knowledge and how we apply that wisdom. So those are the key things that Solomon's pointing out here. I think that's evident in Solomon's attitude in the book of Ecclesiastes. He has been given great wisdom, but yet he chose to live life experiences that then he revisits afterwards and realizes many of these things are vanity and vexation of spirit. As he goes back and looks at them retrospectively, after he's looked at his life experiences and the outcomes of them. Thoughts and comments? I think it's a very valuable point that Brent makes. Is Solomon, being very wise, didn't choose to use his wisdom wisely. And you know, when we are told to provoke one another to love, we may be the way we need to be. We need to be provoked to actually apply it the way we should. Did I summarize that accurately? Okay. In our study today, wisdom chooses the better things. What was the theme of the book of Proverbs? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, beginning of knowledge. So here we look at these things as the basis for this, for the basis of wisdom is our fear of the Lord. So God appeared to Solomon in a dream and asked him what he desired in 1 Kings 3, 1 through 9. And his response back, you know, why first off did God ask him what did he want? Well, there's some comments made in that passage about Solomon's character and his behavior. What does it say about how Solomon behaved as compared to his father David? If we look at this passage right quick, you know, 1 Kings 3, 1 through 9, I think it's important to set the stage for that. So bear with me as we turn there. I hope I have the right passage there. Let's see. Verse 3 starting. And Solomon loved the Lord, and walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and burned incense in high places. And then he went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was a high place of 1,000 burnt offerings that Solomon did upon that altar. And in Gibeon the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, "Ask what I shall give thee." The key passage I wanted to look on there, Solomon loved the Lord, first off, and he walked in the statutes of his father David. So we see evidence of David having taught Solomon. We see Solomon having exhibited behavior of exercising that knowledge in following those statutes and exhibiting his love for the Lord in his behavior and offering of the sacrifices. As a response to that, and obviously as Solomon being the anointed king of the people, God says, "What can I give thee?" I don't know that that would have been a request that he would have just asked of any other king. Did he ask that of Saul? We don't have any evidence of him doing it there. We don't have any evidence of him asking that same type question to David, though both were definitely blessed in their own ways. But Solomon specifically, because of where his position, or where he, as a result of being a younger man or going to be the one that builds the temple, is asked a specific question. But I think it's key here that he's asked this because of his behavior and character. The humility and the thoughtfulness for God's people prompted the measure and the value of the gift. Okay? When Solomon responds here in this passage to the Lord what he wants, verse 6, and Solomon said, "Thou hast showed unto thy servant David, my father, great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth and righteousness and uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, Thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child. I know not how to go out or come in. And thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. And then verse 9, it says, give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad, for who is able to judge this day so great a people? What's typically synonymous with the attitude of most kings? They believe they know everything and they are all powerful and have the right to decide what's going to happen, because ultimate authority relies with them. What did we see in Solomon's response here about how he viewed himself? Very small and limited. I am but a child, and your people are so great. That shows humility on Solomon's part. And I think that as it relates to that humility and that smallness of how he viewed himself is part of what extended the measure with which God gave Solomon wisdom. If Solomon had turned around, and God makes this point to him, because you didn't ask for riches, because you didn't ask for peace from your enemies, I'm giving you wisdom and all these other things. So the measure of it was greater because of how Solomon approached the request. That shows both humility and it shows character on Solomon's part. But you know what? That also exhibits wisdom in and of itself. Solomon had a seed of wisdom through the teaching that his father had given him that he had already started to build on, and God extended that. Throughout Proverbs, Solomon speaks to that which is better. He compares wisdom to being more valuable than rubies or precious stones, depending on the translation you're looking at. In Proverbs 8, 10 through 11, it says, "Receive my instruction and not silver." Notice where I'm using the different words we talked about. "And knowledge rather than choice gold. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things that may be desired are not to be compared to it." So as we look at, you know, the comparison here that we can relate to, precious metals and precious stones draw their value from their rarity and the beauty of the items from which they were can be crafted into. You know, yeah, just a chunk of gold that's a nugget out of a river doesn't look, it's pretty, it's shiny, can be, but it can be all encrusted with a bunch of other stone or rock or sand. It may not be in its rawest form all that appealing. But yet, do you find gold in the river every day? No, it's rare. You have to go into great mines and dig it out and find it if you're going to try and find it. So it's rare. Silver, less so, and not as precious as gold. Precious stones, De Beers mines diamonds in South Africa, but you know they're still hard to find. Those are several thousand feet deep mines there that they're hunting for a few gems a day. If we look at the beauty with which these things can be crafted into, we have an entire industry that's built around creating jewelry. You know, a wedding ring in its simplest form is a piece of jewelry made out of gold. And it's considered precious, first off, because it signifies the unity of the marriage. But the choice of material is often chosen because of its preciousness to parallel that. If we go to a museum where they have crafted some sculpture out of gold or silver, it can be quite beautiful, quite shiny. A gold-plated pocket watch in its simplest form can be very pretty to look at. These are all things here, though, that they get it from their rarity, they get it from their, you know, what you can build into it. If we look at wisdom as well, in the, you know, it's kind of like air in a room. If there's no air in this room, you really notice it, do you not? If there's no wisdom among a group of people, do you notice it? you notice it in a heart, and very quickly. I mean, if everybody's behaving foolishly and there's no wisdom exhibited, it's immediately obvious. And it's in the absence of wisdom, you know, shows the importance of its value. Wisdom can save nations. If we look at the capability that wisdom and knowledge being exercised properly can do, it can save nations. Wisdom can save marriages. Wisdom can encourage those that are struggling. Wisdom can bring peace of mind. I've heard that expression as well. It's better to be thought a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt. Well, you know, it's certainly better to be wise than either of those cases. So, you know, as we look here at the importance of this, we can see the value that it brings. And this list could go on and on. Wisdom brings solace after a loss. Someone that's lost a loved one and has been comforted in a way that they'll remember years from now, a word spoken in some way. And I think that's important. Knowing what to say and how to say it at the right time is a product of our wisdom. You know, how to say the right thing as a function of our experiences and our knowledge as our personal loss might be able to be conveyed to someone to help them in their own loss. Solomon makes the point that it's better to be wise than rich. Riches are fleeting and wisdom is lasting, as he makes the comparison here. In Proverbs 23:5, wilt thou set thine eyes upon that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings, and they fly away as an eagle toward heaven. We kind of grasp that a little bit. If we look at some of the, you know, historically, people that have had great riches and then some calamity befall them in some way where it's gone. The riches are fleeting. Whether they were a swindler that was living the high life and then got caught and it's all stripped away, or whether through some accidental event, you know, if we look at American history, a mining town, all of a sudden a mine closure happens and all the people are struck with it, whether it be the mine collapses inside or for some other reason is closed down. Proverbs 16:16, how much better is it to get wisdom than gold and get understanding rather to be chosen than silver? Why is wisdom so valuable? Matthew 6:19-21 says, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, where thieves do not break through nor steal, for there the treasure, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Other places in the Bible, it makes the point is that we can't take it with us. You know, and the evidence there is that, you know, it's fleeting. It's only for a period of time to be held, and at some point it's going to dissipate. Now, diminishes it value any? No, it doesn't diminish its value, but it should diminish its importance to the holder as not being the most important thing in their life. And that's the point that's being made here, upon what do you rely? And here he's making the point, wisdom is better, it's more lasting, because you learn the lesson upon what to rely upon. The value of wisdom. Wisdom keeps, as we're going to go through here, looking at several things as we look at the value of wisdom, that benefits that it provides. So wisdom keeps us from feeling self-sufficient. I think that also is combined with the lessons learned from humility. Here in Proverbs 1:5-6, let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance to understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. this passage in and of itself is talking about, you know, I can't just rely upon what I know. I need to go and I need to learn more. I need to increase in learning, and I need to have better understanding, and I need to obtain guidance. If I'm completely self-sufficient, do I need any of these other things? If I already have everything I need, is there any point in me going and increasing and learning? No. There's not any point in me going and trying to understand anything any better to get any better guidance. And I think that's a valuable lesson for teens and young people, is they don't know everything to begin with. But the natural tendency is, well, I already know more than my parents do. It's the fact of the absence of life experiences that have changed that attitude. Here he's making the point that wisdom keeps us from feeling self-sufficient. This is contrasted to Mark 10 and 21, where the rich young ruler was told to sell all he had and give to the poor. He came and asked Jesus what he needed to do. And what did Jesus tell him? You needed to sell it all and give it to the poor. How did he go away? Was he excited and rejoicing that he had now learned this instruction and guidance? He was very sad because he was now reliant upon that. He viewed himself as being self-sufficient and wasn't willing to give that up. In Luke 12 through 19, where the landowner has a bumper crop and then takes that and tells himself, you know, he's got everything he needs now. The passage reads, "So you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to you, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." His absence of wisdom with respect to mankind, his own mortality, the importance of the value of the things that he held, led him to the wrong conclusion. And that's in stark contrast with the idea of being self-sufficient. Are we individually capable of self-sufficiency? Oh, that's a really broad question, and it's not really fair. But if we review it from the standpoint of, can we provide our own salvation? No, we're not self-sufficient with respect to salvation. We can only seek and receive salvation through God. It takes instruction, it takes knowledge, and it takes wisdom to realize that. It takes wisdom to walk the life daily in a way that's acceptable to God. A wise person does what he knows is right. In Matthew 7, 24 through 25, "Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on the house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock." We know this story and the parable and the contrast, but you know, we sing the song in children's classes, "The wise man built his house upon the rock and the foolish man built his house upon the sand." Well, both men must have been pretty smart because they knew how to build a house, did they not? They had knowledge. They had instruction. They had been taught how to build a house. But did they apply their knowledge wisely? Not always. Now, we don't know the story here. Maybe one of them wanted a beach house and that they wanted a view of the ocean. But because of their choice, because of how they applied it, it was not considered to be wisely applied. The importance here, obviously, building the house on the foundation of the gospel and Jesus' teaching. But again, a wise person does what he knows to be right, and the importance of this passage as it contrasts the foolish builder and the wise builder. Wisdom brings happiness. In Proverbs 3:13 through 18. Blessed, and when you start a passage out with the idea of blessed, what does that kind of convey? Happy in the King James, okay, blessed. So we look at the wisdom brings happiness. Happy is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For the gain from her is better than the gain from silver, and her profit from better than gold. He just comes out and says it at this point. You'll be happier with wisdom than you will with any of these other things. And why is that? Why might you say that would be the case? Okay.
I think what you kind of started with last bit, Solomon, he had all this stuff, but that didn't make him happy.
That's right. Solomon had all this stuff, and it didn't make him happy. And he tried to apply it many different ways to try to see what would make him happy. What was his conclusion, though?
All his vanity.
But he also came to the conclusion that be content with what he had at one point. And we see that expressed in other passages that we'll go to as well. So, continuing in this, wisdom is more precious than jewels, and nothing you can desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand, and her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are the ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is the tree of life to those who lay hold on her. Those who hold her fast are called blessed or happy. In many aspects of this entire passage, when you consider something that's precious or you consider something that's pleasant, aren't those words that are generally synonymous with happiness? If we want to go and spend a good day in the park, we like for it to be pleasant weather, not 20 degrees outside like it was this morning. Or is going to be tonight. You know, you want it to be pleasant, and that contributes to your happiness overall. He makes the point here in the writing, long life is also one of these things that comes with wisdom. Our choices and our experiences in life and how we apply the knowledge that we have can affect our longevity. If I choose to exceed the speed limit all the time, I could end up in a wreck and die. If we make bad choices in who we associate with, we can put ourselves in harm's way. So wisdom and knowledge based upon experiences that we've seen other people go through temper what we choose to do in a way that helps us to behave more wisely, hopefully. Wisdom brings peace. In Proverbs 22 and 24, make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. Now this passage does not specifically come out and say wisdom. But here, our experiences and the knowledge and the life training that we gain teach us that making a friendship with a man that is given to anger is not necessarily wise. And some of the other passages here in Proverbs make that point as well from a parallel standpoint. We're going to see this emphasized further. Ephesians 4 and 26. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. A man of wrath stirs up strife, and one given to anger causes much transgression. Those are things that run contrary to behaving wisely. Look at the wisdom of Naaman's servant. Naaman was livid when he was told to go and dip in the River Jordan 7 times. He wanted to go. He didn't want to go dip in that muddy old dirty river. There's much nicer rivers up in where he was from. And what did the wisdom of a servant convince him to do?
Something miraculous or something amazing.
If the prophet had told you to go and do something amazing and fabulous, you would have just gone and done it. But he's told you to do something just simple. All it boils down to is obedience. What did Naaman do? He went and dipped in that muddy river 7 times and came up clean as snow. Wisdom brings peace. In this case, the wisdom of a servant child brought peace to Naaman, and ultimately peace to the people there associated with Naaman. Wisdom brings acceptance of one's own state. In Proverbs 15:16-17, better is little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure therewith. Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. Better is little with the fear of the Lord. It's making the point here from a balancing act with respect to wisdom, that one living their life in a way with meager means, but yet living in the Lord, is much wiser than throwing one's life away for the precious things in life and being so far away from the Lord that there's no salvation possible. Carries that into the same description with another parallel, which is a dinner of herbs where love is, than feasting at the king's table, so to speak. You know, if we think about it, Daniel and his friends in Babylonian captivity, what did Daniel ask for? Vegetables. The things that they were allowed to eat that were in correspondence with God's law, as opposed to the delicacies of the king's table. He exercised wisdom in his request and showed his love for the Lord in doing so. 1 Timothy 6:6-8, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these things we will be content. Boy, that's a hard lesson to learn in today's society. Our society is so hyper-focused on materialism and on what we have and on whether it's the right thing as opposed to the wrong thing, or whether it's the latest thing as opposed to the, you know, 2-year-old thing. I don't know of a day that doesn't go by you couldn't see an example of it in someone you associate with, or even in our own lives, in many of those cases where we have to stop and think, is this a need or a want? I mean, it boils down to it with every decision we make. Is it a need or a want? Does it glorify God, or is it something that glorifies me? And the writer here, as Paul is talking to Timothy, he's telling him wise words that he's learned through his experiences, that he's found that whatever state he is in, to be content. That could be really tough, because if your leadership at work is crawling down your back about trying to get things done on time, and yet you're doing everything that you know you can, guess what? You can take certain solace and contentment. I am doing everything that I know that I can do, that God has given me the ability to do, and I'm going to be content with that, and I'll just keep doing the best I can do. We're not asked to do anything more than we're able to bear. So, contentment is great gain from the standpoint of level setting our minds, level setting our thinking. Share a personal example. And I go back to this when I'm working with young interns and students that are coming through college. Going through college, I had to have the absolute best grade I could get. I would study until I couldn't study anymore. For some reason, it was just the way I was driven. And that first class that I had that I got a D from the professor, I thought I was going to die. I just didn't understand it. And that was the first semester. It drove me to work even harder and never try to get behind. But it was my junior year. And I got to the point where my junior year, I was stressed out. I was, you know, not sleeping well. I was all of these things that make you physically sick because of how hard you're trying to do this stuff. And I realized, you know, I'm doing as well, if not better, than everybody else in this class, and I'm not enjoying it. I need to take a little bit of enjoyment out of it with how well I'm doing and be content with that and both learn, but also enjoy it. Otherwise, I won't be able to enjoy it going forward. I finally found that point of contentment with respect to my level of study or whatever. But it helped me at that point to realize there, when looking at this passage, there is a point where you have to realize I need to be content with something. I may need to be content with my 10-year-old car or my, you know, 20-year-old house or my 2-year-old clothes. When I analyze my needs versus my wants. It's an interesting passage as it relates to that, but I think wisdom brings the acceptance with one's state. In 1 Corinthians 13, Paul makes the point that life has no meaning without love. So wisdom, in this analysis, brings Paul to that decision that love is an important part of life as it relates to love toward God, love toward mankind, love toward one another. Thoughts and comments on our study of wisdom and its value, and why wisdom chooses the better things. There's not an individual here that hasn't been affected in their life one way or the other that hasn't garnered some level of wisdom by a lesson that they learned. We call it the school of hard knocks. You know, oftentimes we learn hard lessons and they teach us wisdom. God, in His Word, has given us instruction and knowledge with respect to salvation that is hopefully to help us avoid so many of those hard not learned lessons. Wisdom seeks the better things. Wisdom seeks what He has to say, not what some other man has written, some other religious body has framed. It's what He has provided to us. Any comments? That's so true. It's difficult for people coming along to realize that it's a progression. You're not born with everything. You don't get married with everything. You don't, you know, have your first child with everything. You know, those are all things that you go through and you learn from. And the people that I see that benefit the most from that are the ones that, candidly, in some cases, struggle the most, that have had to work their way through it. The ones that where it was easy for them, they don't value this, they don't learn these wise lessons in a way that helps them be a mentor and an encouragement to others. Any other last comment? Thank you for your attention.